The Download with Justin Kaufman. Justin taking the day off. The week off, I believe, this week. Matt Bubala here with you until 11 o'clock tonight. By the way, just got a text. 847 says, Matt, as a parent, you never lose the look, and it always works. The difference is that as a child, you fear the look, and as an adult, you feel guilty. Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. My mom would probably disagree, tell you all that I never felt guilty, and I just continue to do whatever I wanted. But no, Mom, I did. I really did feel guilty. 312-981-7200. Heather Sharon is the City Hall reporter for DNAinfo.com. She jumps on the phone right now. Hey, Heather, how are you?
Hi, Matt. How are you?
Good. Heather, you have young children at home. And
about,
we were talking about earlier, a reporter we're going to have on later tonight a couple years ago went on a 10-day retreat. No cell phones, no anything, and no talking. And we talked about whether we could get away ever with no talking, especially with kids in the house. And I said, but we all have that look. You know, in the moment where you need to raise your voice, you could always go to the look. You do have that look, right? Do the kids stop in their tracks when you give the look?
Absolutely. I would consider myself a failure, an abject failure as a mother, if I couldn't make them be quiet with just the power of my eyes.
You need that for the public situations, right? I mean, at home, at home in the fall when the windows are closed, because right now the windows are open, so you still can't really, you know, you got to be able to use a modified version of the look and slight raise of the voice. But in the public, and in church, wherever, sometimes you have to be able to get the job done with just the look.
Absolutely. Because otherwise, and then this is the worst, is when they don't either choose to see the look or ignore the look. And then you have to just say their name as very calmly and directly as possible. And if that still doesn't, you know, get them to behave, you know, then you got to sort of, you know, hustle them out of there because it's going nowhere good.
Yeah, it's really troublesome because if they realize mom has no other options. She gave the look. I laughed it off. She said my name, including my middle name. I still didn't budge. What she got left? And that's a real tough position as a parent, because either you just quickly usher them out, which is embarrassing because you want to show the, or we just jump to, like, you know, we go nuclear on them, right? I'll turn to my kids and go, you will never leave the house again. You know, I jump from like, please quiet down to, you will never leave the house again. And then, you know, generally, you know, that's a real risky proposition because you're really throwing all your cards on the table and you're kind of bluffing because you can't let them never leave. It's like, you know, getting halfway to Arizona and saying, I'll turn this car around right now. Once they're old enough to figure out, no, you won't, then what are you going to do? You got nothing left. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's tough. And, you know, when my kids were babies, they're school age now. I used to say that the key to having a reputation as a mom who can handle things is to leave just before, you know, they melt down.
Time it out perfectly.
Exactly.
When do you ghost right out of that situation? All right.
Yes.
Well, we could do parenting advice all night, I'm sure. But there's bigger things going on in the city of Chicago, including our latest property tax hike. We still haven't instilled all of the last property tax hike, right? Because that was kind of being graduated into the system. We still got some of that tax hike to come, and now we're adding another 2.5% onto it, right?
That's certainly what's coming down the pike, but you're right. You know, in 2015, the city council approved a four-year phase-in of the largest property tax hike in the city's history. So that works out to about $588 million over those 4 years. So we're just 2 years into that process, and I would expect in the coming weeks we will see the Board of Education, which I always have to mention isn't an elected board. It is appointed by Mayor Rahm Emanuel, to approve a 2.5% property tax hike as allowed under the bill that Governor Bruce Rauner is set to sign in Edison Park tomorrow.
Real quick on Governor Rauner here, because he vetoed the other bill, and now this one's going to give CPS even more money. Why is he more favorable on this? Because of the way where the taxes are coming from, how it's being handled?
Well, you know, it's interesting because he had a little bit of a victory tour outside of Chicago today, celebrating the passage of this bill through the Illinois House and the Senate. And he was asked that precise question. And if you want to talk about looks that we all have when we can't really use our words, I think the video is a really interesting one because his eyes widened. And, you know, to be quite honest, he ducked the question because you're right. The bill that he vetoed as an unconscionable bailout of mismanaged Chicago schools gives those very same schools, and you can argue about whether about they've been mismanaged, gives them more money. So I think that is a question that Governor Rauner will be asked tomorrow. And I think that it is an interesting quandary.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, Mayor Emanuel, in your story at DNAinfo.com, he really, really stresses how this is not a problem I created. Everybody else was passing the buck for years and we got stuck with this. So now we're fixing it. He's really made it sound like we're bailing out past administrations, but
without ever mentioning former Mayor Richard M. Daley's name, I should be clear to mention.
Yeah, he's trying to confuse people into thinking there was a Republican mayor at some point. Is that what he's doing? Because I think that's tough to feel like, wait, who could he be talking about? You know, he's blaming Bush? What happened here? You know,
right.
So we've got this situation, but you know, I just had Troy LaRavier on last week. The former principal of Blaine Elementary is now head of the Principals Association and possibly going to run against Mayor Emanuel in the next election. And he talked a lot about how back when Arne Duncan was running CPS, there was a lot of money. There were never these problems. But then Emanuel comes in. We go on a spending spree, building schools, chartering schools, all these different things. Suddenly we have all these problems. So Are people agreeing with Mayor Emanuel, or are there plenty of critics who would say, don't even try to blame everything on past administrations?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question because I think there's ample evidence on to make the arguments both sides. And certainly when Mayor Emanuel was elected in 2001, he was very, supportive of charters. He was supportive of the charter expansion that he has overseen. And there's certainly, no doubt that charter schools get money that would have otherwise in the past gone through CPS. And they certainly have reduced, the enrollment of district schools. And now that schools get money for their budget based on the number of schools that are in or number of students that are in seats, I think that's a reasonable argument to be made. However, Mayor Emanuel is not wrong when he says for decades, both the state and the city decided to give themselves what has been euphemistically referred to as a pension holiday. So essentially, they passed a law saying it was okay that they didn't have to make the required contributions towards Chicago teacher pensions. Now, this is essentially as if I call up my mortgage company and say, hello, good news. I have passed a law that now allows me to defer these payments that I am obligated by law, because I signed those documents, to pay you. I hope that's okay with you. Fare thee well, good sirs. And that's essentially what Chicago and Illinois did for decades, honestly. And CPS has now gotten to the point where it's really maxed out its credit cards. It can no longer borrow money to sort of paper over these deficits. And you essentially have a district that is losing thousands and thousands of students every year. And where those students are going is a very, very difficult question. Some of them are certainly in charters. Some of them are leaving Illinois totally, and others are moving to the suburbs.
Well, and you would think that once you start raising property taxes this much, Chicago's already losing residents, and it's just property tax after property tax, soda tax, whatever it is. You would assume that trend is going to continue. We're making it very hard for people to say, now is a great time to move into the city. One other thing that this bill contains is, you wrote, a $75 million set aside for a tuition tax credit program that would offer families scholarships to send their children to private or parochial schools, or to pay the cost to send their sons or daughters to a public school outside their home school district. Now, so that's a voucher program, in essence. How do they decide who gets to use that?
Well, that's a really good question, and we don't have a lot of those details, because typically in a program like this, which is among the largest voucher-like programs in the nation, you would have had weeks, if not months, of hearings and different versions and sort of a long time to sort of figure out the details. This provision was sort of what made it possible to get through the General Assembly. So this drew enough Republican support, and while it sort of prompted several Democrats to drop off of supporting this measure, this is what sort of is the big change that pushed it through. So the honest question is, nobody's quite sure. The Democrats have said that if the program is maxed out, it would mean about 6,000 scholarships, but it's unclear, you know, whether those would be for students who are already in private schools, so it wouldn't sort of draw more students out of CPS. Now, opponents of this you know, program say it's another blow to CPS because it's another way for parents to sort of defray the costs of pulling their students out of CPS. And every student that leaves CPS, they take those dollars with them. So the long and the short of it is that we don't really know, but there are strong, strong feelings on both sides.
I imagine. And is it okay to think that set aside, that $75 million for a voucher type program, is what got Bruce Rauner to sign the bill?
I think that's probably a pretty clear thing. It's his big win, and as we all know, the governor's race is in full swing, even though it's, you know, still more than a year away. So this is what he can say that he got for his trouble of vetoing the original school funding formula, which of course didn't include vouchers and included less money for Chicago, as you pointed out. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out, because all of the Democratic candidates, to varying degrees, have come out to oppose this voucher program and vowed to let it expire once if they're elected.
Heather Sharon is the City Hall reporter for DNAinfo.com. When we come back, military weaponry is going to be available to police departments again now that the Trump administration has turned over one of President Obama's orders. What does Chicago think about that? What does that mean here? That's next on 720 WGN. Texter from the 847 said, our mom gave us the look and the silent treatment. My brother and I are in our 50s and still tell our mom that we wish she would have yelled, because the look and the silence were just pure torture. So maybe you'll get that from the kids someday, Heather. Maybe they'll say, I wish you would have just yelled.
I can only hope.
My kids will never someday say, I wish you would have just yelled, Dad. They won't ever have to say that. I know that. Heather Sharon is joining us from DNAinfo.com. She's the City Hall reporter. We're going over some of the stories she's been covering the last couple of days. Military weaponry is being allowed again for police under a reversal by the Trump administration on something that the Obama administration had done. Chicago's head police officer, Eddie Johnson, is important about this. He says the important thing to remember is that equipment like that should only be used in isolated incidents. But we're talking about, you mentioned in the story that Trump's order will restore access to camouflage uniforms, bulletproof vests, riot shields, firearms, ammunition, other items, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a limit to the bulletproof vests police can use now? I imagine that's something that couldn't have been stopped under the Obama administration, was it? Or is it a special type? Or the,
right. It's the a special type. So, you know, Kevlar sort of standard issue police vests, you know, that there were no restrictions placed on that by the Obama administration, but there are sort of military grade, bulletproof vests and other sort of protective gear that Obama's order did stop the local police departments from requesting. But most of this equipment is like tanks and rocket launchers and things that you would more often see, you know, in a literal war zone as opposed to the metaphorical war zone the president has accused Chicago of being.
Yeah, you write in the article, Obama's order forced law enforcement agencies to return grenade launchers, bayonets, armored vehicles, weaponized aircraft and vehicles, as well as firearms and ammunition of 50 caliber or greater. What's funny is they're like, you know, we'll take some, let's get some grenade launchers, but let's go with bayonets too, because we like a retro thing once in a while.
Sure, because you never know when you're going to need to fight the British invading army. It could definitely happen.
There could be some hand-to-hand combat here. Let's get some bayonets. And then what you do is you march up with the bayonets, and then when they think, okay, we can handle this, then you whip out the grenade launcher. And then you surprise everybody. But, you know, we're joking about this, but on the one hand, I could see, well, the police should have access to any type of bulletproof vest they can have. I don't understand that. On the other hand, I don't see a situation where we want our local police to have a grenade launcher. Now, you know, for protesting, for even if a protest got violent, I can't imagine a scenario where somebody says, you know what, let's just launch a grenade launcher into that crowd. That always seems like a bad idea, unless you're fighting off some sort of terrorist attack, at which point I wouldn't think they would, you know, expect the CPD to be leading that with a weaponized aircraft. What local police department is ordering some sort of weaponized aircraft?
Yeah, well, I mean, this really came out of the terrible riots that occurred in Ferguson, Missouri, after the death of Michael Brown at the hands of an officer. And we all saw those pictures of, you know, with tanks and helmeted, armed to the teeth officers sort of moving in on crowds of protesters, whether they were peaceful or not peaceful. I think those pictures really shocked people. And that was the genesis of the Obama administration's order, which the Trump administration has said was too restrictive of police departments. And this is part of a larger effort by the Trump administration to roll back some of the changes the Obama administration made in terms of policing. And that, you know, we've heard Attorney General Jeff Sessions say several times that his predecessors went too far in restricting what police could do in terms of, you know, what they were legally allowed to do in terms of how they were able to enforce the law. And this is part and parcel of that effort, which, you know, has also had an impact on the reform effort in the wake of the Laquan McDonald shooting here in Chicago, and sort of whether, you know, it's still up in the air whether a federal judge will come and oversee those efforts.
You know, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think this might be an instance where I'm actually going to agree, hold on, with the Trump administration, because I do wonder, and I don't know all the details on this, but I do wonder if it went too far. When we look at what happened in Charlottesville last week, something like that happens, the police have to come in, whether they're protecting people or pushing people away. I mean, if you look at it that way, because everybody, you know, we look at something like Michael Brown, a very racially charged situation, as you know, something where we're going to question whether or not how armed we want the police to be. But in Charlottesville, something like that, where the police have to come in and break this up or force protesters out or move something along for the protection of people and just to shut something down, maybe we don't want the police to go in there and not be protected. Now, I don't want them with grenade launchers, and I don't want a militarized plane flying by and taking people out, that's for sure. But I do want the police officers to be as protected as possible. So whether that's shields or bulletproof vests, I'm glad that's being opened back up. I don't like everything that's possible, it sounds like, but maybe something, you know, sometimes things aren't just so black and white and easy to figure out, I guess.
It really depends on where you draw that line. And what's interesting is that as part of the reform efforts that were sparked by the death of Laquan McDonald, both Mayor Emanuel and Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson have said that they want to refocus the department's effort on community policing, where officers are trained and ordered to work with the community to solve crimes, as opposed to just sort of, you know, rolling in and arresting quote unquote bad guys. And I think, you know, for people who oppose this order by the Trump administration, their argument is that it's very difficult for police officers to build that kind of trust and that kind of camaraderie with members of the public if they're carrying a grenade launcher, or, you know,
yes,
if they roll in on a tank, or, you know, if they are carrying an AK-47.
Well, I think all of that is true, but those are not the situations where you're building community trust. If you're rolling in on a tank, it's because something's going very wrong, and that's not the trust building moment that we are looking for. Heather Sharone is the City Hall reporter for DNAinfo.com. Check her out online. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone tonight, Heather.
Oh, sure. Anytime, Matt.
All right. Go give those kids that look, okay?
I sure will. They got to be in bed pretty soon.
There you go. Good night, Heather. That's right. It's time to give those kids that look. Get them in to brush those teeth. Let me see those teeth. Those aren't brushed teeth. News is next, 720 WGN.